closer.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
I was talking to him. We'll just jump right in here. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic. My name is Nick Paul. That's Simone Turkington. And Robert Ramirez is at Best Buy today. I'm really sorry, Simone. It's just, you just get me. You don't get
okay.
The fun jokes. But yeah, it's funny. I was talking to my dad yesterday, and he had rheumatic fever for 2 years in like sixth and seventh grade. And he was like slowly coming to the realization that maybe that's why he's a little, I mean, maybe that's why he's a performer, and maybe that's why he's a little bit emotionally off at times.
Right.
And he's like, oh my God, this is going to happen for so many kids going, because you have a little one, and
yeah,
it's, I don't know, how have you been dealing with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because he already, is not, kind of shy kid, and trying to push him out of his shell. And it's like really hard because he doesn't have enough chance to interact with other kids. So he doesn't like to share in class on the Zoom meetings. He'll share one on one with the teacher. But yeah, it's been rough. And yeah, yesterday he was just giddy because he got to see another kid from a distance and scoot around a bit. So he was like out of his mind, like he was on speed. But yeah, it's really sad.
Oh man. Well, how have you been taking this creatively? I think I have days where I'm like, I'm gonna make all the things, and I'll go a week like, I quit. I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah. So at the very beginning, I was like, oh damn, this is gonna be a while. I'm coming out of this with a whole new show. So that
I think
was
we all
much.
That.
And I don't think I have even a whole new routine, even one.
Oh,
but wow. I have been dabbling in a lot of things. So I kind of, because I mean, I thought, oh good, I'll have all of this time. But no, I have less time because all the time I would work on stuff while my son was at school is gone because he's here now all the time, all the fucking time. So so we do have a benefit. We do have a studio office off-site, like it's about 10 minutes away, so we kind of have a getaway. My husband can go there and do stuff, and I can go there and do stuff. That's where all my magic stuff is. So that's a good escape to have, but still I've got to like be monitoring the school stuff, all day. So yeah, and then then after school's over, he's still around. So it's by the time he goes to bed, I'm like, I'm watching TV now. So mm-hmm. but I've had like a weekly meeting meeting with some other magicians. So we've kind of like been motivating each other. We had like a few weeks just working on thumb tips because none of us really did any thumb tip work. And so I've just been like kind of trying to build up skills that I feel like I should have to be a well-rounded magician. So I've like done thumb tip stuff, working on some, flourishes and things with cards and cups and balls. Like now I have a cups and balls unscripted, but I have a cups and balls routine that
that's all you need. You don't need these people talking during cups. You don't need to be talking. It's an amazing trick.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny actually, because I was working on it yesterday and I was like, I guess if I'm going to do this, because we're going to have a mini show amongst the friends, just, to have a goal to work towards. I was like, okay, I guess I'll do that. And I'm scripting it. I'm like, what do I say other than there's a ball here, I'm going to put it there. Like, and then I watched Ricky Jay perform it, and it was like 7 minutes long with all these like different types of cups and bowls. And then I kind of realized that, I mean, obviously it's amazing because he's so brilliant, the execution wise, but the pattern was like the history of cups and balls and how different cultures and stuff did it. But I would just like catch fragments of that because I realized it's kind of like having a like pasties that are really decorative, but that's not really what anybody wants to see. They just want to see the magic, so mm-hmm. I was like he's selling it with all this other stuff, but it really, I don't know, it was almost distracting because I don't know, it was weird. So yeah. I came out of it thinking, I don't know what to do about scripting that. So, yeah.
I love, my favorite is Penn and Teller's, and then doing it with plastic cups that you can see through, and it's still amazing. I think just a testament to how good that trick is and why it's the oldest trick in magic.
Yeah, yeah. I know. That kills me. I can't believe, is that or is it an accumulation of things why the magic circle won't have them?
I think there's a lot of reasons. I don't know. I don't know the details. I barely follow in the magic drama in Hollywood. So sometimes it's like in your face,
and
you can't you can't get away from it.
Yeah.
But then you just turn off Facebook, or you just turn off the news. Anyway, how you're relatively new to magic, right? Or have you been dabbling your whole life?
I dabbled when I was a kid, and then I dabbled again in my, I was like, what, 34? And I started taking classes, actually, at the nearby Center for Inquiry. I just got an email newsletter saying there's magic classes, and I kind of like, oh, I want to do that. But it's like, I'm 34. What are you taking magic classes? And I felt stupid. And but I asked my husband, I was like, can I take these magic classes? Like, yeah, do it, do it. No, he's too super supportive. So yeah, so I did that and I felt like, yeah, I'm going to take this seriously. I'm going to become a professional magician. And I'm just like not a self-motivator at all. So I just pretty much got over that idea. Like, you're not going to do that. You're not going to do that. You're too lame. And then 2 months later, I was pregnant. So I was just kind of, you know, wrapped up in that for a while. But then, yeah, then it was like 2 years after that, after my son was born, he was almost two. Elizabeth Messick and I were, she was babysitting my son actually. And while she was babysitting, she was hanging out one day and she said she liked magic. And we also both like 60s and tiki and ABBA and all this stuff. So so then I thought of just like doing a magic 60s tiki themed magic act. So I was like, I want to do this, but I was like, I'm not going to do it by myself because I'm so lacking in motivation, self-motivation. So I asked her, I was like, do you want to do this as a duo? And she's like, yes. So we had this whole concept for an act with like no magic, pretty much, like next to no skill. Like we know some stuff because we both, you know, learned a little bit, but yeah, so we had to start from scratch. So we just sort of spent the next year and a half learning magic, getting classes at the Magic Castle and meeting people and going from there.
That's what's so great about LA in general for the magic scene. It's like you can just do it. You know, I don't think any other city you could really pick, hey, you like, okay, we're kind of new at this, but we have this idea. Okay, let's just work at it and get lots of mentorship. And I mean, just in the couple years I've known you, I've seen you progress, you know, 200-fold. And it's, you know, the show is so tight and strong now. It's great. And it's really fun to watch you work. We did a show together, what, a year or two ago. And that was a really fun show, too, to see. What was that? The Jonathan Club or something?
The Cicada Club.
Cicada Club.
Yeah.
And it was fun to see just kind of how you've, you know, gone from duo act to commanding the stage as a solo act.
Thank you.
Really selling your, you know, your perception and your opinion of magic, and it's really refreshing to watch. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you. That's so nice to hear. I started out more with something to say than magic to show. So I guess it would make sense that's sort of always going to be a strong part of what I'm doing. But I mean, like you said, having all that mentorship that you get in LA, and also having the, you know, dungeon down at the castle, like, you know, I did hundreds of sets down there to polish it, you know, like it's most people, where would you get that chance in any other city to just go week after week and just do it until you get it, you know, perfect.
I give you credit. I did that once, and it's weird. I can work the actual rooms where I'm getting paid, but the open mic rooms where people just kind of wander in and sit down and they didn't really know a show was happening, I get so in my head. I did it once with Simon, and I was sweating bullets. It was
God.
Be able to do that over and over again. Oh, that's great, though, because that's where you get your chops built up. You need that.
Yeah, because that's the thing. It's like, I mean, there is definitely a difference, because just being in any of those showrooms, everyone walking in that room, is you've already been validated to them. You're in the program, but when they come in the other one, you're just like some bozo who's, you know, might just do move their thumb or move your...
And we have seen that. We've seen that.
It's funny, actually, we were talking about that in my weekly meetup. You know, I'm talking about, because you can't see, but the, you know, where you have your thumb and then you slide it, like it looks like your thumb is split in half. And actually, like, everyone was doing it kind of wrong, and I ended up actually teaching the best way to do the thing.
I don't know how to do it correctly. I've never even tried to learn, because it's like, well, I can't actually put that in the show, so I'm going to pretend. But yeah, you see people doing it incorrectly all the time.
Yeah. They use the wrong joint. So maybe I need to put out a YouTube tutorial that's going to blow up.
Your husband is a very famous comedian, Neil Hamburger. How long have you guys been together?
Oh, long time. So yeah, we met in 1996 and we got together in 1998. So yeah, it's been, and at that time, Neil Hamburger just existed on records. He wasn't a real performer. He was a concept album of a comedian that sucks on stage. So they were just like these faked like shows with like him telling jokes, no just glasses clinking, no laughing. But then, you know, enough people got into it that he ended up bringing it to real life. So so that's what he's been doing with it for like now over 20 years, is actually being Neil Hamburger.
Yeah, is he doing any sort of virtualness at this time?
No, he hasn't. I mean, I think he's been asked to do a few things. He's done stuff with his other work, because he's also has like a web series and other stuff, other projects he's been involved in. He's done some stuff with that, but Neil Hamburger has been bringing in the cash with that. He put out a thing last year saying Neil Hamburger will send a postcard to anywhere for $10. So he's just been writing postcards, like just like Neil Hamburger in character, having a shitty time on the road, you know, with bad meals and bad hotels. And he's getting all these vintage postcards off eBay. So yeah, that's just been rolling in. Like he's done like, you know, over 1,000 of those. So that was a nice little burst, but it's actual work, you know, whereas me, I'm like, I'm doing my part. I'm going to the EDD website every other Sunday. So I'm bringing it in.
I have not worked this week. That was me all summer, man. I mean, no shame. That's just what you got. When all the gigs go away, you're like, you know what? I was ashamed for a little bit. And I'm like, you know what? I've been kind of paying into this for a while and I've been working my butt off. So, I mean, it was really refreshing to be able to stop taking it. And I hope that's able to continue. I don't know. But yeah, over the summer, there was like a little bit of shame. And then there's like, no, who cares? It's a global pandemic. Yeah. This is what I'm doing right now.
Yeah, I mean, literally the places they're shut down. Like we cannot do anything. And then a lot of the jobs that we would be able to do remotely, there's, you know, not enough of them and too many people applying for them. It's just not easy to just get, you know, a remote, because I can do administrative work, but it's just not easy to come by. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did before I gave up that to focus on magic. So yeah, I can slip back into it, but I keep wondering what does it look like on my resume, like, oh, 10 years working for this company doing, you know, website updating and data entry and writing copy and photography, then 10 years, then 5-6 years being a magician, and now I want to be back in an office. Like, will they just tell me to just go away, or will they think like, oh, this could be
it
fun.
Is weird magician because, in the office. Yeah, before I started doing this gig with Justin and then doing my virtual shows, you know, you're trying to get off unemployment, you're like, that's obviously the goal, you don't want to be on there forever, but like, you're putting out your resume and you're doing stuff that's not performance related, and you're like, oh, I'm qualified, but on paper, I'm not qualified at all. Like, I know I would be fine at this job because it's not rocket surgery. It's data entry. It's Excel spreadsheets. I could do that. But, oh my goodness, it's amazing, like, the amount of red tape you have to get through.
I know. And America puts so much stock in the college degree, more than in Australia. Like, I don't, like, everyone's like, oh, you went to college, you know. And it's like, I can write better than, you know, I think a large percentage of people who did graduate college. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, I didn't have to go to college. I just something I'm good at, which is why my very, very particular boss let me write copy for the marketing and stuff. So, which was not my job, but I was brought into. I was brought into answer phones, and I ended up getting all these other jobs to do. But yeah, so it's like, but on paper, it's like, I don't have any, you know, diploma to back that up. But
that's the tricky thing about what we do, is like we're more qualified, I think, than most people in a bunch of different ways, but we just don't have anywhere. We just can't show it on paper. It's like, no, I don't.
Exactly.
I don't have a business degree, but I've been self-employed for 20 years running myself as a business. Nobody else is doing that. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. But I think somebody can just get charmed by it. You get the right people that kind of into having people like that, you know, like they can, they can, because, and I think I benefit a lot with that with my previous job, because there is a creative company, it's a fabric designer, so they're like painting, doing art, and I was acting when I first joined, and they were just like into having me do that. And when I started doing magic, they were into that, and I would do some tricks and stuff at work, and they love telling people now, if anyone asks where I went, oh, someone left us to become a magician. Like, they just love that they can say that. So
that's good to have. And that was in LA?
Yeah, Burbank.
That's what's nice about Burbank and LA, is like, as much as I get frustrated by it, you know, not even non, you know, pandemic things, but just like the the stuff that you have to deal with on just the weird taxes and all that stuff, there's still like a great mentality of people that are supportive, and especially for magic, but just in general, of like being, oh, Simone's good at this. Okay, she can do that. And that's, I think you see a lot of that if you're working on a set in some way, like in my minimal experience on sets, like, oh, so-and-so can do that. Great. Well, what's his background? Doesn't matter. He or she's good at that. And you're able just to, and that doesn't really exist outside of LA, which is kind of strange.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's people are used to having to adapt in a lot of different situations that arise.
I can do that.
It's funny. I was thinking, you know, you see those lists come up on Facebook. It's like, you know, answer yes if you will put an emoji next to everything you've done. Flown on a plane, got a tattoo, and stuff like that. I wanted to make like such an LA one, like been an extra, been on a podcast.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that that normal people in other cities don't end up having done.
Have at least two famous people in your phone that you don't actually talk to, but you just got that one night at the castle.
Exactly. Yeah, there's so much of this. I really should put some work in. I think because I just think of two and think, yeah, I should do that, and then I haven't bothered to work on the list, but it could be good.
Yeah, it's interesting to try to stay motivated during this time, because I mean, going back to what we were saying of, okay, I got this great idea, I'm gonna do it, and then you're like, well, in your case, you know, gotta take care of the kid, or I gotta, you know, make sure my life is running smoothly before I can focus on a brand new endeavor. And it's really tricky.
Yeah. I think I went through not doing as much, at least for me personally, as like focused on what I need to be working on to progress my show for, you know, the last 10 months. But then I really got more focus now. You know, Jack Goldfinger's talking to me about if I have anything for the castle show. I'm like, I kind of do, but so I'm like, okay, well, there's a goal. Like, work on that. You just need one more piece, and you could have a set. And and like now, because it's obviously going way longer. It's like what I was doing before the pandemic was I wanted to like work out a cruise ship set, so 2 45-minute sets for cruise ship. That was my goal for 2020, and I didn't do any of that because it just seemed pointless. But I feel like they'll come back eventually, and it would be good to have something close to ready at that time. So that's what I'm trying to put my focus in now, is just sitting down and scripting things that I'm working on. So I got this app. It's to like kind of monitor habits. So I'm like telling myself to do at least 30 minutes of magic at least 5 days a week. And once I start, that ends up to me just keep going past it, doing whatever I'm doing. But if I'm barely like, all right, it's 29 minutes. Okay, I'm done, you know, so I can stop if I want. But most of the time I just keep going. Sometimes I'll go 2-3 hours if I've got the time. So, but just getting that first bit of time started is really important. So I'm making that happen and allowed to stop if I don't feel like it. So, yeah, but that's been working. I've been keeping up with that probably for the last 5-6 weeks since I started doing it. So yeah, that's been helping me get stuff done. Habit Bowl. And so it's just a place to, you know, keep track, and it'll remind you if you're getting a bit slack. So but I recommend that'll just something, even if you just, you know, write it down on paper. But that for me really helps, because I'm very goal oriented. I need to have a finish line to work towards, and if I don't, it's like, I got forever, it's fine.
I like to pretend that I'm like, I'm above goals. I'm like, why would I do that? It's not gonna happen. But it's hilarious, anytime I write something down, put it on a piece of paper and look at it every day, you know, you're just subconsciously working towards it, even if you haven't done anything for it that day.
And right,
it does work, as much as I don't want to admit it does.
right. You see, I have a problem where if things are just sitting there, like I leave them out in open view for me to think about it. Because I remember I was sewing a dress like probably 10, 15 years ago. And I had a dress form, and I had done the dress, and I had a jacket to go with it. And I kind of left it for a bit, and I'm like, well, just keep that out in the living room, because that'll remind you to work on it. But then it just becomes like part of the living room. Like there's just a dress form there in the middle now with a half-made jacket on it. Like it just stays there, and I kind of forget about things because it just kind of start to blend in with the background. So that's always my trouble, is that I think maybe there's too much clutter in my life.
Yeah, we run into that problem out. too. Yeah, if it's not I'm finding that if it's not organized, if my office or something isn't at least somewhat organized, I really start slacking. But have to have each individual project or each individual thing laid out so I can keep working on it. But yeah, it's amazing how quickly something will fade into the background or just feels like it's been there the whole time and you don't want to work on it anymore.
Speaking of being organized, so because I'm pretty disorganized. I'm one that ends up taking something out, not putting it back, and then there's suddenly piles of stuff from many weeks. And then I have to periodically do a full put everything away. So it was like that in my office. Everything's beautiful and put away. But the problem is having a place off site is that I'll put stuff, have stuff there and have magic stuff here. And I want something and I don't know where it is. Or I think, oh, I left that there and I go there to get it. It's like, it's not there. Oh, it was here all along. And it's just driving me nuts. And so I was looking for some kind of app to track all my stuff. So I found this app. It's actually for like construction contractors to track tools so that if you have a drill and that guy checks out the drill, so you know that person has the drill. So you put all the inventory of all the stuff. So I did that. I could use it for magic. So I had tracked everything. It was like 1,200 items, but it's everything like this glue, this scissors, you know, just so that I know where everything is that I use. And it's been amazing because I'm like, oh, where is that thing? And I just type it in and like it comes up. And yeah, it's, and as long as I just keep make sure I put in when I move it from one place to the other and record that, it's really, really helped.
That's genius. That's a great idea.
Yeah, yeah, it's called Share My Toolbox.
Okay. Use promo code 2magicians1mike for 0% off. I keep saying that, but I'm putting that out into the universe, so maybe we'll get a sponsor. Maybe they will.
Yeah.
You'll get it. You'll get a $10 kickback anytime somebody purchases 100 of it. Where did your interest in performing come from? Were you doing any performing before magic?
Yeah. So I think I ever since I was a very little kid, I would like jump at the chance to get on stage. There was like, I remember in the middle of the mall, there was like some sort of it was a Rock and Robin disco. I think it was like a disco that like goes to people's houses for parties and things. So they were having a promotion and they had kids on stage and my mom puts me up there and they're like, shake your bum. And so I was like doing like duck butt, shaking my butt. And then I won a prize. And just anything we would go to, like we went to see Bobby and the Rockers and like, they like need a volunteer. And I'm like in the front row, like practically dislocating my arm, trying to pull my hand up so high, please pick me. And then my sister would be like, she's next to me and she knows she's supposed to want to do this, but she just kind of meekly raised her hand and not like, she just didn't. And only when she came to the castle with me a few years ago, I was like, we're going to the close-up room. I said, oh, do you want to sit in the front? She's like, no, I don't want to get picked. And that's why I finally had this conversation with her. I was like, did you never want to get picked? Because you never tried very hard. She's like, no, I never wanted to get picked. So I always liked that. And then any chance to do acting and stuff in school, that's when I realized I really was into that. So, you know, I did a bit of, you know, performing, doing magic in school and at my Girl Scouts group. So, it just always felt very natural that if I had something to do, I'd be happy to show it. And then the flip side, of course, being totally introverted and socially awkward and I can't go to parties. Oh my God, please let me leave. So it's just weird, like how I feel very comfortable doing something that's specific. That's why I always feel like I'm okay to have people's attention if I'm actually doing something, you know, like people that just want attention because they exist. Like, I don't understand that at all. Sure. Like, I'm happy to get attention if I feel like I've done something worthy of your attention. So, So I think I've always had that in me. And when I first moved to LA from Australia, I was pursuing acting, but yeah, that's a tough road. So
yeah, we were talking about at that gig, I was mentioning about our own anxieties we battle with and just before every show. And it's amazing how you can do something 1,000 times and it's still there. Oh, okay. Yep. Got to, you know, worry in the pit of my stomach. Got to deal with this now.
Yeah.
And then you do the show and it immediately goes away and you're like, oh, I can do this no matter what. And then the next show comes.
Yeah. I was thinking like earlier, like the difference between like the, the horror, just like the horror in the stomach, the bad feelings before show and the euphoria after. Is that what like drug addiction is like? It just seems like this cycle of you feel horrible, horrible, and then you get your fix and you feel amazing, and it just keeps, whereas if you just left the whole thing behind, you wouldn't have to deal with this at all.
Yeah, but, and I've heard people like Conan talking about that. He's like, I think that's the reason I didn't get into hard drugs, because you know, we're performing for a living, and it's like you're getting the most insane drug all the time.
Yeah,
and it's like nothing else is going to compare to that. I don't think I would be interested to talk to, when we had Zabrecki on, you know, he's been sober for many years, but I didn't bring that up. I'd be interested to talk to him of like, okay, what's more exciting, the rush of heroin or the rush of performing?
Yeah,
and I would bet it's performing most of the time.
Yeah, and I think he does get jittery before shows. He's not like totally whatever. So yeah, so he would have that, the two different feelings. So, but yeah, no, it's rough because sometimes it feels so bad that I'm just like, why am I doing this to myself? It's like torture going in. And then and that time we did that Cicada Club show, I think I'd had a bad show at like the previous week or something, and I just felt like complete crap. Like, what are you even doing? You suck. You can't do this. And then that show, like,
a show.
Yeah.
Sorry guys, we love you, but man, we both struggle with some audiences there.
But and it's a Cicada Club show, like, you know, I came off stage like, you know, just like just struggling.
Yeah,
I felt
you
amazing.
Killed that show. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And it was on like right when it started, I had them, and then it just, and then once you get that, it just feeds it, and it just like, then you're giving me the best show ever. You're giving yourselves the best show ever by being so enthusiastic. So
you remind me, that show reminded me, and I swear it's not a comparison because you're both women, I swear, look beyond this, but there's a wonderful ventriloquist, Lynn Trevsker. I work with her on Disney Ship. She's been on for years. And you would see this in the adult show, too. She would get up, do this adults-only show, and this lady walks out with a puppet and looks like, you know, a normal suburban woman. And you can hear rumblings in the audience. Oh, here we go. What's this going to be? And then within a minute, she has them, because I think that's kind of your superpower in a way. You look like this normal person, and then you just command the stage. And once again, it's not a female thing. That goes for men too. And I think that's like a superpower you have, and you're really developing it well.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Because that's the thing. I only found out a few years ago, because as I said, I'm generally pretty insecure and introverted at parties. You know, I just sort of assume nobody's gonna like just see me and think, oh, she's interesting and want to talk to me. I just assume I'm just a wallflower. That's how I feel. But then I found out, like Elizabeth told me, that I'm intimidating, not in a bad way, like I'm a bitch, but that, like, I look like somebody who does stuff and is important and interesting.
Yeah, why are you angry? What happened to you?
yeah. So it's like, wow, I didn't realize that because I'm super friendly. Anyone I'm like, you know, gets the benefit of the doubt. You know, if there's no doubt, I'm just like super friendly with anybody. I don't have these airs of superiority, but I apparently kind of look like I'm a bit more worldly and thus intimidating, which is just funny because that's how I kind of feel about nearly everybody at any said party that I go to. So it's like, I keep wanting to channel that fact that, because that's a benefit. If I go into any situation and people are already seeing me that way, I'm starting from a different place than how I actually feel I'm starting. So, and I feel like on stage, I feel like that a little more because just the whole setting is right. I'm, you know, dressed up perfectly. And as I said, I've got something to give them. So I feel like I actually, I deserve it in that moment. But just generally, even I realize I've got more sort of power to control the situation and present myself than
it's
I realize.
Bring that up, because that's how I think that's where a lot of my frustrations with audiences come from, because it's like, okay, oh, people see me as being reserved and in control, and normally when you're performing, you're in control, and then when you're in front of an audience that you're not in control, that's where I start to get frustrated. Wait, why don't you see me the way those people see me? More in your head. And I think, as an introvert, that messes with you more than, you know, someone who's an extrovert, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I know, because sometimes, like, I see extrovert people just not, like, just the way that things roll off their backs, you know, they don't even notice things. Whereas I'm, like, noticing everything and more than I is even there, because I'm just watching and obsessively, you know, figuring out what's going on. but yeah, but just certain things, like, 'cause my mom and my sister are extroverts, and like, just something, they're not that they say rude things, but just things that they're completely unaware that what they just said might be taken a certain way, you know, whereas I would like never have said something in 1,000 years worrying about, you know, mm-hmm. thinking of what that might happen. And yeah, it's weird. I'm yeah, so in my head.
Yeah, it's a good and bad skill to have, because in magic that works out really well. I've been able to use that to my advantage of like, oh, I don't think people are going to notice me doing this because most people would be focusing on this as opposed to that.
Yeah.
You know, the big gesture as opposed to the little gesture. But in real life, that is a challenge sometimes, because I wish I could just turn off my brain. And I gotta say, AirPods with noise cancellation are just, or any sort of noise cancellation headphones are a godsend, because you can immediately shut off the outside world if you're in public. And it's been very helpful for me, and it helps me sleep too. I can immediately, silence shuts off my brain. So I don't know if that's a trick that's, you know, for use for anybody else, but it's been immensely helpful for me.
So if you use that when you're outside, like, would you be like walking and stuff and have the noise canceling headphones, AirPods on? Because isn't that sometimes frightening? Like, you just like not knowing what
sounds are going
on
around you. I guess it just forces me to be more visually alert of my surroundings. It's probably not super smart. When I jog, I do have it on, and then I have music playing. So, you know, if I get hit by a car, that's probably how it happened. But it just immediately, you know, helps me kind of meditate in a way and just turn off, you know, observing the world, because it's a blessing and a curse as a performer to have that. And I wonder if you go through the same thing.
It's sometimes I wish I feel like I should stop, but no, it's worth it. It's totally worth it. It's always worth it.
I tried to stop. That's the thing, is like, I think this year has kind of forced us to stop. And then you realize, oh, I actually, you know, when right before stuff turned off, I was like, I'm done with ships, I need a break, I don't want to do this anymore. And then you get a break and you're like, oh, okay, turns out I don't like the traveling, but I enjoy the performing part of it.
Right.
You learned what's actually messing with you and frustrating you, I think.
So what was your journey this year in terms of at first not doing anything, but now you have an online show?
Yeah, just kind of dabbling in it, and then just working with Taylor Hughes and John Armstrong, and then starting to work with Justin Willman on his virtual show. So I've been very lucky just to work with guys that were motivated to just do this. I don't think I would have done it on my own, but just seeing all of us kind of teaching each other things of like, oh, here's this new tech for this, or this makes it better, or get this camera. My heart goes out to anybody who just jumped right into a virtual show without any help, because I've had lots of help. And it just goes back to being in LA and with the castle. I think that's what we probably miss the most about the castle, is that you just show up and you immediately start collaborating with a friend, or, oh, hey, so-and-so, Simone would be good for this, we're doing the show. And it's not that I wasn't thinking of you, or that the booker wasn't thinking of you. It's just like you literally walk in the room and now you're in their thought process. And that that doesn't exist anywhere else. That's what's so nice about LA.
Yeah, I know. That's what anyone, because people are like impressed because I'm not a go-getter, and it's like, wow, you really did great with your magic in such a short amount of time. But I was like, it would not have happened anywhere else. Like 100% guarantee. Yeah. I'm not selling myself short here. I'm glad I managed as much as I did with the amount of energy I usually have. But yeah, it wouldn't have happened without pretty much everything in place to like propel me forward if I was willing to go. So yeah, I can't recommend it enough if somebody wants to do it. But again, I was already here. I didn't have to uproot my life. So
yeah,
I mean, I'm 10 minutes away from the castle. Like,
yeah, same. It's like, all right, I guess I can go to the castle. And it's like, what am I doing? It's like 7:30 at night. I guess I'll get dressed up.
I get that. I've got this before, and it was like a capacity. Okay. Oh, it's a private event. Okay, fine. Just turn around, whatever. Go back. Like nothing. No problem. Where'd you get these people who like plan their day from Orange County and get there and then they get turned away? Like, I don't,
It's a weird thing. I mean, because I've had that said to me a lot too. It's like, oh, you've only been in LA 5 years and you've done these things. But it's like, when in reality, it's like, well, I've got to know other performers, and, you know, just you've collaborated and you've had a little network of people that have helped you get to where you are. It's like, I didn't do this by myself, but we got to know like-minded people that, you know, you can do cool stuff with.
It's like no other place for magic, I think.
What do you think is next for you? Pretending the pandemic's gone tomorrow and we can go back to doing live shows, what do you think is next?
So I think where my focus is going was trying to have more of a like corporate show and a cruise ship type of show. So that's what I would want to get back onto doing, because that way I can, because I really like 2019, I really hit my stride. I had a lot of gigs. I actually made, I think that was the first year I turned a profit doing magic. So that was good. So 2020, I had vocal cord surgery in January. And so I wasn't really doing anything January, February. And then March, I was about to start this long run of, you know, doing Illusion Magic Lounge and going to, first time being flown to a place just to do a show. I was going to North Carolina, and and I was going to Mammoth Mountain. I had a whole bunch of stuff lined up, and then obviously it all just went to hell. So I feel like I was already on that path that I wanted to be on. So I just would like to just get back on that. Mm-hmm. And I've been scared a few times because I've done a few like Zoom shows and stuff. And I feel like, oh my God, I don't know how to do this anymore. But it really clicks in like within like two run throughs. I'm like, okay, don't worry about it. You're fine. But at the time, I had to rewatch one of my own videos to like remember, remember the routine, like the order of how I do stuff. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, I got it. And then it's, yeah. So I feel good knowing that I can, even if it's dormant for long stretches of time, that I can bring it when I need to. It's still in there. It has not died. So that's good.
Yeah, I think we all have this fear. And it's funny, Justin, I think, went 2 weeks without doing a virtual show, and he was all in his head. And I'm like, dude, I watched it. And it's, you look as good as you did 2 weeks ago. But, you know, you get in this, especially comedians too, it's like, oh, I've gone, you know, 3 days without doing a show. Oh my God, I'm going to be rusty. When I think in reality, it just goes back to that drug thing we were talking about. It's like, you just need that fix, you know, to prove you've done something and, you know, enabled yourself worth for the day. It's all in there. The muscle memory is there, even if it takes a day or two to wake it up, I think.
Yeah. Actually, a few times I've found the muscle memory in that maybe it lapsed a little bit, but to my advantage in that I actually changed the handling a little bit. Sure, and then it's like, oh, this is kind of better, because it's like I just so got used to doing it a certain way, and then in slightly forgetting I've done it slightly differently, and
it's hard to unlearn something once you've learned it. But yeah, if it fades away a little bit, then you can kind of reconnect the neurons in your brain of like how this all works. It's pretty
exactly
cool.
Yeah, I've been happy that I was like, ooh, it's quite exciting.
So the pandemic was worth it. That's what you were saying.
Yay, thank you, pandemic.
Oh my goodness. I think it's taught us, I mean, obviously minus the horrible tragedy, the deaths and whatnot, a terrible, terrible thing, but I think it's taught us all to just, one of the few advantages it's taken, taught us all to just to take a breath and go, okay, what's important? What do I like doing? What am I going to focus on? And hopefully that sticks. I'm hoping that sticks with me. You know, it's day to day is different, but.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I've got more of a negative view of the whole thing because, well, I mean, we look at the situation where we, you know, how many years we've been talking about, you know, environment, take care of the environment, which is not something we can see right now. Everyone's talking about in the future, this is going to happen and that's going to happen, and expecting people to change their behavior now to solve that. Well, now we're in a situation where we need you to change your behavior now to fix what's happening now, and mm-hmm. people are not able to do it. So I'm like, so in terms of other stuff, I'm like, I don't think, I mean, there's always going to be plenty of people who will see that and have the realization you just mentioned, but then there's going to be not enough people. There's just too many people who just don't want to maybe do
literally every other day is positive and every other day is negative for me. So
But I always think of, you shouldn't have met today.
It's my fault. My podcast. I've made this mistake for 12 or 8 years now. I just think of that quote at the end of or maybe the middle. I can't remember what part of the movie is in Men in Black, but Tommy Lee Jones goes, "People are smart. Or the person is smart. People are dumb, or people are stupid, or something like that." And I think we're really seeing that. So you talk to someone one on one. Yes, I'm being safe. I'm doing this, and then I had a huge gathering. I went to a wedding.
It's like cult thinking, you know, that's getting people into a group and then they think differently. What's that? Do you know that psychological test where it's like everyone's like part of the test except the one guy, he's the actual subject and everyone else is in on it, but they're showing them lines and that are of different lengths and they're supposed to say which one is the longest, the tallest one or the longest one. And they're very obvious and everyone says the same thing and gets it right. And then after they do about five, everyone starts saying B when B is clearly not as tall as C, and he's lost, so everyone says it, and then he says it too, even though mm-hmm. clearly it is not, you know. So
well, if I could call upon my 1 week in grad school of psychology, that would be called cognitive bias, is what that is.
Yes, that's right.
I guess that doesn't exactly refer to it, but that is more so just like not being able to take in new information, even though you know it's blatantly incorrect, because you're using past views and past opinions to kind of override yeah. that.
But yeah.
Yeah, that's yeah. a great point. That's exactly what we're seeing daily. And yeah, it's a tricky thing. Oh boy.
Yeah.
It's like, why isn't this going away? Because it should be. You would think in LA, a very blue area, that it would be, but it's clearly that that's kind of a misnomer in LA. It's people yeah. are more selfish than they are socially liberal, I think.
Yeah. Well, again, too, I think that a lot of the people siding with all the, you know, socially liberal things, again, is that just more part of groupthink? Because when it comes down sure. to it, like, they're just like, I really don't care. I want to have a party. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know,
because yeah.
definitely, I mean, I know I go into any new group of people and you're just going to assume everyone's on the same page politically, you know? Like, I mean, it's just the kind of the people you surround with. Like, I don't even assume that I'm going to talk to someone who's yeah. just going to, I mean, that I, you know, that's constantly with the people I'm hanging out with, it's just going to be from the other side. So
anyway, let's talk about something positive. We've got a few minutes
yeah.
left. Where do your inspirations for the 60s and Tiki come from? Is that something you've always had? I talk to you and you have a bamboo behind you. You have several Tiki
yes.
things. You have a tiger in, is that underpants behind you?
Yeah, the tiger is wearing pants oh. and then the child is seems to want to trade pants with the tiger. It's like somebody did this drawing. It's like it's like pencil on fabric from like 1951. We found it at a flea market.
Oh my goodness, that's great. That's I just like how yeah. the tiger's like, nope, I'm not giving you yeah. my pants at all. The kid just stand there naked.
Like, please. Yeah, all these influences. I guess I that kind of most started when I was like in my like late teens, early 20s, I think. My husband was really into Tiki stuff, so that's kind of how I got introduced to it. And then my favorite band was like doing a lot of covers. Like, I think I should just think about it as old people music, you know, like mm-hmm. when you're a kid, like, I like this and my parents like that. But my favorite band was like covering a lot of 60s songs. So I started to get into it from that angle. And then I realized, oh my God, there's so many great songs. So then I just got into it. And then I started getting into vintage clothing, and it was just kind of, it was a mishmash of any period. But as time went on, I really love, like, just drooling over all the 60s dresses, hairs, boots, you know, all of it. It just, you know, so all of those things combined, it just seems like that's my dream. If I could go back in time, it would be like 60s London, even though as a woman, I'd be treated like shit in other ways. aesthetically, that's what I'd like to be.
It would be beautiful.
Yes.
You would just suppress all that and go, well, I need to take care of my husband now.
That's right.
That's funny. Yeah, it's interesting how, like, we can... I think it's important to kind of pick and choose the things we're inspired. Like, I'm in a movie club, and this month, we've been doing a lot of silent films and watching some Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton stuff. And it's like, well, if you can ignore some of the not so okay things Buster Keaton did and Charlie Chaplin yeah. did, it's like they were great people in some ways and other people's they weren't. And you just kind of have to, you know,
yeah.
pick and choose.
Well, I think that's. I was going to say, we're kind of struggling with that with my son because. Mm-hmm. He, you know, we're in a time now very much teaching them about, you know, Black Lives Matter. His school is like super, super, you know, liberal and inclusivity and all of that stuff. So he finds out that, you know, Thomas Jefferson had slaves, and he's just doesn't care what damn Declaration of Independence he wrote. He's just like, he had slaves. He's a horrible person. And I'm like, yes, yes, but, you know, it's like he's not wrong, but, you know, it's just hard to, he can't quite get past that.
That's what I really have been struggling, if, you know, whatever, we'll go back into politics, with the younger generations. And it's like, okay, yes, that is terrible, but you're looking at it through 2021 eyes. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm not saying it's okay, but it's like, that was the norm then. That's just how it was. And
yeah.
these people also, you know, made America for better or for
yes.
worse.
Yes.
And for all of our flaws, we're a great country. You know, at the end of the day, I mean, I mean, look at 2 weeks ago. It's like, we're a very resilient country, and there's a lot to be said about that. But there's a lot we got to change. There's a lot
I know. It's, you know, some people, the black and white stuff is just, it's frustrating because it doesn't get us anywhere. And also with all this, like, canceling of stuff, like, that somebody said a while ago, I'm like, I said plenty of horrible things in the 90s, not because I was, you know, so prejudiced, because just people just say that and not care or think too much about the depth of it. You know what I mean? And you know, like, you know, saying everything was gay, like that was just a thing everybody did in the 90s. Yeah, yeah. And like, I would never use that as, you know, as a derogative at all. It doesn't even pop into my head anymore. But, you know, that was the normal. So if like somebody came up to say, oh, look at you, you're just saying everything's gay, I'm like, well, yeah, but that was, you know, I was not homophobic at all. Yeah. You know, so,
my favorite line about that is the Office quote, the Michael Scott one. Have you ever seen that?
I'm all UK 100% all the
way. He uses the R word, and then he uses it in a very funny context. And I don't even think they could get away with it today, but still, it just, it's explaining exactly what you were saying. He's like, I wasn't actually calling somebody that. I was you say that when your friend is being the R word.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, that's most people's mentality. It's like, they're not using it angrily, or they're not using it in a hateful way.
Yeah. But as the person who is the thing that you're saying, then you realize you're just throwing what I am around as an insult. So yeah, that's the problem. It's funny because my son, he's allowed to swear, but he doesn't say the R word. Like, that's a bad word. And I think that's what's important. It's like, all when I was a kid, like, you don't say all of these words, but we're saying all of these other horrible things that were technically not allowed words. And it's the meaning of the words is so much more important. So I'm fine with him saying, you know, all kinds of swear words, as long as he doesn't say it at school or in front of, you know, elders outside of the house.
If you
but the R word is like, no.
Yeah, because that is hurtful to mentally challenged people. And saying something's gay is hurtful to LGBTQ community in any way, shape, or form. And it's like, okay, we've as a society, this is what we've established now. But you shouldn't go back and cancel people like Kevin Hart or Eddie Murphy for making risky, what would be now considered unkosher jokes.
Yeah.
Because you're looking at it through this set of eyes. So.
Yeah. It's really, it's tricky for these youngins to get that. Maybe they will. But you know what? They'll figure it out once things move even further. And then they realize they're out of date and said all these horrible things.
Yeah, that's the thing. I experienced that, once again, in my 1 week of grad school. I'm just looking at all these 23-year-olds. And I said something just referencing being married, or I said something about being in China and critical thinking, and just something we've said on the podcast multiple times. And I just blurted it out there because we were talking about critical thinking. And, you know, just the blank stares I got them from all these like 22 and 23-year-olds. I'm like, oh yeah, they think I'm a terrible person right now. And it's just, that's their perspective. They haven't experienced, you know, what other people, how other people see things, even though I was clearly joking. And it's like, oh boy, definitely put my foot in my mouth.
Now I know it's like fat shaming and stuff. Like, you know, I used to, you know, again, it was just so easy to just insult people or how they look. And I was like, I don't even really see these things anymore, because I'm just trained myself out of judging people just on their appearance. And so, and my son never heard the word till he was like about 4 or 5. And then somebody referred to themselves as fat. And he's like, he'd never heard somebody call somebody fat before. And yesterday I was talking about my cat from when I was a kid, and I said he was very fat. And he just said, you could just say that he's big. I said, okay.
See, your kid is pushing you in the right direction, even if it's frustrating. Well, how can people find you on the Instagrams or the YouTubes? Where do you promote stuff? Do you care about social media?
I'm on social media. I'm not like doing magic on social media, but I'm on there. I post randomly. My Instagram is @TikiDoll, and my website is magicsimone.com. So you can at least see what I do and how I look, and you can see how busy I've been before. So I actually updated my website last week because it still had like the dates for like that were coming up that I didn't do. And I didn't want it to look like the apocalypse had happened and just everybody like lifted up into heaven. And, and this is how the website is left in time. So I at least put everything as TV, you know, to be determined. And,
I yeah, do so that it looks too. Like it's, upcoming live shows. Let's just put that as an unlisted page right now.
Yeah, yeah. That's my stuff. But yeah, so I'm available for booking when places will have me.
Yeah, that's, well, you know, fingers crossed. 2024.
Yes.
Well, thank you for doing this, Simone. It was good to chat with you. And
you too. Thank you.
Give the best to your family and, you know, hang in there. Keep having fun. Keep creating, I guess. That wasn't like me telling you to. That was just like, yeah.
Kind of sounded all... like an order.
This part's getting cut out because I was mansplaining to Simone. Here's what you need to do, Simone. I don't know if you've ever done magic tricks before, but I'm sorry. And my wife calls me out on this quite a bit. And I don't even realize I'm doing it. I'm just trying to be helpful. Then I come across as a dick.
Yeah. I think it's only when you're explaining to somebody something they were already saying or that they know. That
sure.
That
yeah.
The problem.
That's the worst.
But otherwise,
that's the
you
worst.
Know, people explaining something you need to know. Please explain.
Yes.
There's that good flow chart. Have you seen that flow chart to explain, mm-hmm. to tell you whether you're man explaining? It's like, you know, did the woman ask you? No. Okay. Don't say anything. Does she know more about this than you? Yes. Don't say anything. Like, you know, did she ask you? Yes. Okay. Keep talking. Like, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's great. I've seen that before. That is wonderful. That just, I need that on my wall at all times.
Yeah.
Just for life in general, not even for male, female. It's just shut up and listen.
Yeah. Well, just talking to people in general, anybody can benefit from, because there's plenty of women who just, you know, do the same thing. It just doesn't have a title because it's not as prevalent as it is with men. So yeah, displaining in general, yeah, mm-hmm. is problematic.
Stop splaining.
Yeah.
Ricky Ricardo has been talking about it all the time.
I was thinking Ricky Ricardo. Right as you said it.
He was ahead of the curve. Well, thank you for doing this. It's great to see you. And hopefully
you
we'll see you in the real world soon.
Yes. Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagiciansonemike.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs at @twomagiciansonemike. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.